Welcome back to Good For You Radio. I'm Claire Carter with some afterwords. Some afterwords from the interview with Mike Jaffe, and I'm here with a man who's producing Good For You Radio with me, David Bernstein, a good guy, well-known in the radio industry, former program director of WR Radio. David, one of the things that Mike Jaffe had said in his book is, you don't need a tragedy in your life to wake up to the possibilities that exist in your life. What did he say that just rang true for you, whether it was September 11th or just getting up and making changes in your life?
He put in words something that I think deep down we all know. It's mine for the taking. If there's something that I want, I can't just take it, but I can earn it. As a child, I wanted a career in radio. I took it. Now, you can't just take a career in radio. You have to get into it, earn it, find a place to belong, and make mistakes like you never dreamed you'd make before. But those mistakes you learn from. And I realized in life, if you want it, take it. Figure out how to take it. You can't walk into a grocery store and take what you want.
No, you're not taking it for somebody else. You're taking it for yourself and not taking it away from somebody else.
Right. I knew the things, very young, I knew the things in life that meant something to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I would have it. I didn't know if I would have a good marriage. I didn't know if I would have children. I didn't know if I would have a great career, but I knew I wanted them. And I knew to move in the direction that is most likely going to get me the things that I wanted.
You know, what's interesting about when you say about mistakes, that was a lesson for me when I was on the air years ago working at FX Cable. And after we had launched, the person in charge, you know, they wanted everything to be good the first, you know, couple of weeks. They don't want it to look like basic cable. And I'm hosting this show called Personal FX, The Collectible Show. And a couple of weeks later, the person in charge, Peter Feynman, walks into the studio and just says to me, you know, now it's okay to make mistakes. Now we can settle down. Okay, now we can go make mistakes, you know. But you need to make mistakes because you're never going to get to the next place. You're never going to get better at something if you're so afraid. You got to be perfect. You got to make a mistake.
Well, I like Teddy Kennedy's comment. Teddy once said, perfect is, how did he word it? Perfect is the enemy of good. And I thought about that. At first, it seemed odd to me because somehow we all seem to strive for perfection. We don't realize that we're not going to get there.
Well, perfection is imperfection.
Yes.
I mean, you're just striving so hard.
Yeah. And I started realizing that nobody makes it to perfection. And if you keep trying and don't get there, you're going to become an unhappy person. I think happiness, mental happiness, is the key of life. I believe that there's nothing that's stronger than being at peace with yourself, happy with the good things that happened and content with the things that you couldn't help but go wrong.
But there are great challenges that come into all of our lives. And I think, you know, September 11th being one of those defining moments, I know for me very much, there's a turning point in life when you feel, not in a bad way, but you feel different inside. And I remember a sermon he listened to years ago. There was a great truth teacher, Eric Butterworth, and he said, don't just go through an experience, grow through it. And so when something happens, you have to say to yourself, okay, how am I going to grow through it? Even though years ago I fell down a flight of stairs and I didn't kind of see the growth experience. It's like, why did this happen?
Yeah.
You know, I hurt myself. It's like, why did this have to happen? And I'm trying to figure out, okay, but there are people that I met that I wouldn't have met if I hadn't, you know, had that experience or whatever. The doctor that stitched me up at the emergency room, I mean, she was wonderful. She managed to do it without shaving my head. You know, she just put in stitches. And I said to her afterwards, I don't know if a male doctor would have done that. Not meant to sound sexist or anything. But she said, well, not that they wouldn't have cared, but it would take more time to stitch it without, you know.
Sure.
But you remember those people and you give gratitude for the people who make a positive difference in your life. You also remember the people, you know, Osama bin Laden made a negative difference in our lives that day. But out of it, I just said, I want to do something that makes a positive difference in people's lives. And that's how the Good For You Network grew as an internet venture or even beginning Good For You Radio now. It's too important. there's too many stories out there. There's too much news out there and information that can empower people, that can make a positive difference. I love what Mike Jaffe is doing right now, especially with nonprofits. If you help these nonprofit companies that want to do good in the world to do even better, because they may not market themselves well, they may not fundraise them well, they may not, certain people, they may be good at their job, but they're not good communicators or good managers. So you give of your time and your talent, you know, that idea of tithing. You know, you can give money, you can give your time and talent.
And somebody will find it. There mm-hmm. will be a recipient who understands what you're doing, and they'll get something out of it. I was in a bizarre situation last week. I moved out of a house 2 weeks ago, moved out of a house. It turned out the new place that we're living is not ready, and we ended up homeless. Now, I did not, my wife and I.
And you lived in that house for a long time.
I lived in that house over 20 years. I sold the house. We were very happy. We were moving to a different location, and it wasn't ready. And we were in a position of, well, now what do we do? We literally had no place to sleep tonight and a car full of belongings and a dog.
So what did you do?
That's even an understatement. The loveliest of lovely women, who happens to be a nurse in the doctor's office that I work in, said, well, for God's sakes, come home with me. We barely know her. She said, don't even question it. Mm-hmm. Come to the guest room. You're welcome to be there. And we have new friends now, because we've discovered something in this woman and her husband, Ann and Carrie, who were marginal acquaintances of mine a week ago, and now I'm living in their house waiting for mine to be ready.
They made a positive difference in your life. I am reflecting right now on September 11th because it's the fastest 14 years, and I'm thinking about all the people who made a difference. That night, I walked out of my neighborhood uptown towards 8th Avenue, and I'll always remember getting to about 16th Street, 17th Street, 18th Street, and all of these rescue vehicles were coming from all these different states. And I had tears streaming down my face because they were coming to rescue us, whether it was from Massachusetts, Connecticut, Virginia. I mean, it was an armada, a sea of rescue vehicles coming in. And these people making a positive difference, people who breathed in dust, people who may today have health challenges and certainly need our help in terms of what they did. Rescue workers. I remember 2 days after September 11th, David, walking out of my neighborhood to buy an air filter. And then when I tried to walk back in at 14th Street, it was the first time that there were state troopers in New York City and you had to show ID. But in those days, you know, who took a driver's license with you? Because I wasn't driving. I mean, today, to get into an office building, you have to have your driver's license.
Right.
And so I had no picture ID. And finally, the state trooper took pity on me and said, okay, if you didn't live here, you wouldn't have bought the air filter that's in your shopping cart. He let me go. And as I was walking down the street, and I got to a certain part of the street, which was around Charles and Perry Street in the West Village, I could no longer breathe. And I put a mask over me. It was just a paper mask. It wasn't a big deal mask, but you could not breathe. And the next thing I know, it's like a flatbed truck of rescue workers was coming up the street. Everybody poured out of their homes, their apartment buildings. And we are standing there and we are applauding and giving the greatest standing ovation to these guys who are sweaty and dirty and full of dirt. And they're waving at us and smiling and we are applauding. It was the best standing ovation I ever gave. And with tremendous emotion, and you think about what people did. And one of the guys who was my fireman in my neighborhood was also, I was taking an acting class with him.
Oh, so you knew him.
Yes, but, you know, it's just like Mike Jaffe telling a story. I think about that. This guy was about to get married. And so you pay for acting class by the month, whether you're going to take acting class or not. He decides to take a makeup class because he's about to get married later in September, and he picks September 11th to take his makeup class. So that morning, he wasn't there. And 8 out of 11 of his fire department that were there did not survive. The person who replaced him, if I remember right, did. Mm-hmm. He got down there a little bit later. I remember saying to my acting coach, you always have to keep this, you know, policy of makeup classes because it saved a life. it saved a life because he was taking a makeup class. And you hear a story like that and you go, whoa. And I remember going over to bring some cookies and a check to this particular, you know, fire department to say thank you to them, to donate in the community because these were the families that needed it, rather than to a national organization. This was my community. This was my downtown community. And all I could think about is, thank God you're alive. Thank God you're alive. I'm looking, you know, I'm bringing chocolate chip cookies and a check. And I'm going, you know, thank God you're alive. Because look at all the people who gave of themselves. And by the way, at Christopher Street and the West Side Highway, 24/7 people were manning so that rescue workers, if they needed a break, they could come up and they could get the applause and the signs and whatever and go back. What an extraordinary experience. It was like on one day, one week, months ahead, it was the worst of what people could do, and it was the best of what people can do. How people came together to be there. What do you need? What can you do? What can we do for each other? In embracing each other. And that's something that I will live with. Very fortunate in terms of my own family that a family member survived. And maybe a lot of it was instincts that day as well, when there was a choice. People way up top had no choices.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like if your instincts was, I got to get out of here.
And those things really do exist. I was sitting with somebody who was working for me at the time at WOR Radio, and he was sobbing. And I said, what happened? He said, it was the most extraordinary experience. My father works at the World Trade Center. And he went to work. And the thought of never seeing him again was devastating. 20 minutes later, the phone rings, and it's his father. He says, what happened? He goes, I haven't missed a day of work in 20 years. I got up this morning, and I just didn't feel like going. And this is a guy who doesn't skip work when he doesn't feel like going. He never did that before.
I have the chills as you're saying this.
It's a true story, and I didn't know how to respond to it because I didn't quite understand the depth of it. I just, on the surface, knew that he didn't even have a reason not to go in that day. He just went, I just didn't feel like going.
There are so many stories like that. I had dinner with somebody several years after September 11th, and they said they had a business meeting, a breakfast meeting. They were going with one of their coworkers to meet with somebody, have breakfast at the World Trade Center that morning. And the night before, this guy calls and said, I'm just so sorry. I'm just not feeling well and really sick. And his being sick saved three people. And then there are the heartbreaking stories. Somebody told me about a friend of theirs whose daughter just started working at the World Trade Center and Tower 2. And he immediately called his daughter to say, leave. And his daughter just started this job. She says, no, Daddy, the boss said, you know, we should stay. And he pleaded with her to leave, but she stayed. You know, it's like the boss meant well.
Sure.
You know, nobody knew. It's like the people in security when they said, as my family member was coming down the stairs, you know, Tower 2 is secure, it's safe to go back. And some people did go back. I mean, they meant well. They didn't know. And she said when they got to the mezzanine level, the second plane had finally gone in. And of course, security was trying to prevent people from leaving because of falling debris. And we now know that there were people who jumped. But at that point, people stormed security. They left. She said some people pulled out their cell phones to call loved ones. She ran in heels. So your instincts, and you hear so many stories, and there are no answers as to, you know, why is it some people are in the wrong place at the wrong time, you say, at that 1 millisecond in history? There's no explaining it. There's wrong place, right place, fate, destiny. We don't know.
If we can't, there may be a reason. We can't know what it is, and we're not going to know what it is, but there may be a reason for that. I remember thinking when I got the phone call from the school that my kids were going to, I answered the phone. They said, is this Mr. Bernstein? I said, yes, it is. And they said, oh, thank God. Okay, we'll send your children home. Because they were calling houses and there was no answer, and those children were not allowed to go home. I answered the phone, so my children were allowed to go home. They still had a parent.
You know what I'm thinking about in terms of the kids? There were little kids who had to leave their school, an elementary school near the World Trade Center site. And I still remember what they reported afterwards, where teachers, because these were little ones, said to these kids, we're going to hold hands, and you know, we're going to run and skip and jump. They didn't want to get them fearful. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. And they finally were able to make their way to, whether it was to the Hudson River, to be evacuated by boat. Not all of those children's parents would survive. But I also remember that Tuesday, we New Yorkers were supposed to go to the polls to vote in terms of the primary for mayor, and that got postponed for another 2 weeks. And it was interesting that afterwards people were asked, what are your priorities in terms of who you're voting for and, you know, why and issues? And people, you know, listed economy and education, which are good, worthy goals, but like national security was down further. And I remember thinking to myself, for me, national security, number one, because without it, you don't have a pocketbook. And there were people in my building who died. Without it, you don't have, without that kind of well-being, you don't have a classroom. And those kids who had to leave and evacuate, whether it was the high school, elementary schools. So we need that sense of well-being that we're used to live our lives, to be able to go out, have our work, have our everything that we're used to on a daily basis, and things that we tend to take for granted, just like we take good health for granted until something happens. But that made me so much more aware.
Well, we believe that there's a norm. We grow up to believe that everything has a norm. There's a norm for eating. There's a norm for sleeping. There's a norm for socialization. Well, there really isn't. There are some right things and wrong things. You can eat well or eat poorly.
Your choice.
Your choice. But you, when you make that choice, you live with the choice. And we have to learn what our own personal boundaries are. Because we have to be happy. This goes back to what I said before. You got to, if you can be happy, and I don't mean happy as in giddy, I mean happy as in at peace with yourself, to look at yourself at any time and think, if today's the day I'm going to meet my maker, I can look back and go, wow, that was a pretty awesome ride.
I wonder how many people can say that at the end of the day or at the end of they're going into the next world or wherever you believe we're going. That's a very special thing.
I can say
to
it.
Be able to
I,
say.
I can say it because I believe it. And it seems almost silly because there are so many things have not gone right or at least not gone in the way that I had presumed it would go. Mm-hmm. But so many of them turned out better. So many of them have turned out more exciting than what I could have thought. I've moved many times. That's not something that I wanted to do. I'm a stability type of person. I moved several times, more than I cared to. But what it did for my career and what it did for my marriage and what it did for all the things that are really deep down important for me have made them so much better. And so if I had planned it out, it would have been good. But the curveballs that I got have made life terrific.
But you know, in listening to Mike Jaffe, it's sometimes we have to listen to ourselves, our own inner voice, our own intuition or whatever that will lead you. And I had said to him about today, people can be so busy, you know, with their technical devices and they're on and they are distracted driving and there's distracted walking and there's distracted living. Sometimes I remember Nick Bilton wrote a really good column in the New York Times. He was aware that finally he had to cut back in terms of some of this, like social media, to be more productive in his life, to get more out of his life. And he said, you know, back in the 1920s, I think it was, Ernest Hemingway, you know, was caught in a rainstorm and he's telling the story of, and he ran into a Paris cafe and he started jotting some notes. And it turned out it was the first chapter of his autobiography, A Movable Feast. And he was wondering, as we would wonder today, so what would Ernest Hemingway be doing today, or a Hermes Hemingway? Oh, I'm caught. Well, I think I'll check my emails, do some text messages. But maybe that first chapter of your memoir doesn't get written, because in those days it was just different. It was food for thought.
I think that that's very relevant today. Everybody uses social media differently. There's those who don't use it at all. There's those who want to make sure that the entire world knows that their eggs were runny this morning. And I think...
Is that kind of like more than I need to know?
Well, it's certainly more than I need to know. And I don't post that way, but I do find...
Notice I didn't ask you what you had for breakfast
right,
this morning.
Right. I do find I like to read what others have to say and see where they're coming from. But I don't think there's a particular interest in what I have to say, unless it's about something that's socially relevant. But just to talk about whether the eggs were okay this morning or not isn't going to change somebody else's life.
Did you brush your teeth this morning?
What's today?
But it can, I think what Nick Bilton was writing about and why I just said it was good for him for writing it, somebody I was talking to this week said with a parent, that parent was like oversharing sometimes. There is, it's good. My mother would give me the adage, because a little bit of something is good doesn't mean a whole lot more is even better. There's knowing when it comes to desserts, you know, like, and I've got a sweet tooth. But when it comes to anything, it's like that balance so you don't all of a sudden addict it to the technology at the expense of. There's a place for, but not at the expense of what we're doing right now, which is talking to each other or having relationships. I remember sitting at a dinner one night with a group of people I didn't know, and this one woman was complaining that, and she was married with a child, that her mother would call her, you know, regularly, and she didn't want to be on the telephone with her mom. And I'm thinking, she's complaining. I'd give anything for another conversation with my mom, anything in the world, turn around the attitude of gratitude, anything for that conversation. And why are you complaining about it? Because I got to tell you, 50 years from now, you're not going to be checking your text messages to say, what did my mom write to me? But you'll be looking at cards. You'll remember something that you did together. Those are the things
that
you
absolutely
cherish.
And you'll be making decisions. You'll be making decisions that you'll realize, I wouldn't have made this decision X number of years ago, but I'm doing it now, and my mother would have done it this way. My father would have done it this way. My life is more influenced by them, even though they may be gone, than I ever dreamed it would be. Things that I've said, my, you're crazy, dad, you're nuts. I'm doing all those things now, and I realize they were right. And they had a perspective I couldn't see.
There is something about mom and dad, you know, the old father knows best. When I created the goodforyounetwork.com, I did not know that my mother would be leaving. And I eventually recorded Life Lessons Learned from My Mother under Good For You blog, because she was somebody everybody learned from, everybody loved. And my mother taught me, treat everybody well. Everybody well. Didn't matter who they were, you treat everybody well. You don't have to think about, do I be nice to this person? Do I be nice to that person? Just treat everybody well. And she lived her life that way, and there was something about her that no matter where we were, I can't tell you how many times that happened, to be at a restaurant, you don't know people, strangers coming by. I can't leave without saying hello to you. What was it about her? My mother would look at me. They'd say, oh, you're so cute. And my mother would go, I say, Mom, get over it. You're cute, you know? but she didn't understand. What was that quality? And I think people just saw this goodness, this giving nature, this caring person who also believed that part of loving you was the right to give you lecture number 1,343,262. Mm-hmm. And looking back, most of those lectures were right. So we were talking about food and healthy eating. You know, my mother believed in lacing meatloaf with wheat germ. She didn't believe in the white pasty bread. She believed in the whole grains. She was ahead of her time. She believed that anything banned in Britain should be banned in our house. I follow all those things. Now I look at it and go, I can't tell somebody else what to do. I'm not the food police. But all of those good quality ingredients, the fruits, the vegetables, the whole grains, the things that I was raised with, and never sick. I'm a big, if you can avoid hospitals, medication, and surgery, so far, so good. Mm-hmm. By the way, it's good if it's there if you need it. But if you don't need it, or if you could do anything you can to prevent something. But those are all the things that we learn from parents, from family, from our experience. And I think from September 11th, it was learning the preciousness of life. It was my mother who called me that morning. I was walking out the door. I don't watch morning TV. And she said, Claire, turn on the TV. She was watching the Today Show. The first plane had just gone in. It just had happened. And what I said to her immediately Mom, it's terrorism. It hadn't even been announced yet. How did I know? I knew because I'm looking out the window. It's a beautiful, clear, sunny day. I see the Hudson River, and I'm thinking planes don't go into the World Trade Center on a beautiful, sunny day. And we were on the phone when the second plane went in. And so we went through all of that together by phone. And then until we knew that our loved one was okay, which was hours later. But you never forget that. You never forget that experience, nor should we. The gratitude for each day, but also whatever can be done in terms of preventing that, a commitment that nothing like that ever happens again. And I'm very grateful. You know, I was grateful for all the years when Ray Kelly, police commissioner, and anti-terrorism units keep us safe, not just for New York, but for wherever in the world people are.
So we can do something, so we can accomplish something, so we can advance the world to its next step. And we don't get there if there are things to hold us back. There'll always be things to try to hold us back. We're just not going to let them.
I mentioned to Mike I had gone down to the World Trade Center 2 months later. It was hard. You know, I wanted to pay my respects, but that smell, the cloud, the memories were so strong. It was very hard and very emotional, but it was important to me to do it. And I was just down there for 2 hours, 2 months later. And I will tell you, and I'm a healthy person and I rarely ever get sick, for 2 weeks I had that World Trade Center cough that happened just by breathing in. And I will never forget the sights, what it looked like. But also there were makeshift memorials at different places. And I wrote down something from one of the memorial sites. It was probably the Teddy Bear Memorial site. It was written there. And I think there's something about passing it along. We can reach out and give. And I don't know who wrote this. We can reach out and give and then reach out some more. We can help make a difference like never before. We can take a close look deep within our hearts and stop any prejudice right where it starts. We can vow to respect every faith, every creed, knowing each offers comfort to spirits in need. We can make this America's best shining hour and ask for the wisdom to help guide our power. We can keep candles burning and proud flags unfurl. We can pray for our nation. We can pray for the world. We owe it to ourselves, to our country, to each American who has suffered so deeply, to always remember September 11th in our hearts and do whatever we can to make a difference in the world.
We are. We are.
Yes. So that's what I like to think Good For You Radio and the Good For You Network is all about. And we love to hear from you as well. So we're goodforyounetwork.com. We're on Twitter at GoodForYouNet, Facebook, Good For You Network. And if you have a reaction to what is being said, if you're looking for some advice on a particular subject, if you would have some ideas for stories that we'd like to, you'd like us to cover, or stories you'd like to share with us, share your story at goodforyounetwork.com, or you can email me at claire@goodforyounetwork.com. David, this is the beginning of our journey of talking with each other and also bringing on people who are out there making a positive difference. I think good people can agree to disagree with each other when it comes to different issues of our day, whether they're political or social issues. But it's good to hear it, because the only way you can become a believer in something, the only way you can make up your mind to something, is to open it up, to open up your mind to different people, even people who think differently from you. Then you become a better believer. And I've always known, because we talk about food, you know, and I'm not the food police, there are always going to be three groups out there. Those who, you know, already with you, they're doing it. Those who are going to say, you
never,
know, leave me alone.
Never,
I've got
never.
My double triple Mac and my Krispy Kremes and whatever. But there's that wonderful third group that kind of is open and is listening and going, yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. I'd like to learn more. Not sure about that. Maybe I agree. Maybe I disagree. And like to feel like we can create this Good For You community, because on the Good For You Network, we have Good For You messages that you can send to each other to inspire and motivate, to express thanks and gratitude, to encourage and support. We've all been there in terms of loss of jobs, loss of loved ones, to congratulate for the good things that happen in our lives. and a Good For You boardroom, which is online journals, and you can keep a grata board, a gratitude journal, or a goal board, an idea board, a dream board. I know sometimes your dreams are telling you something. Write them down. You'll forget them. This is all part of this community that we are creating. So happy we're in this journey together. I'm Claire Carter with David Bernstein, and this is Good For You Radio.